Rob and I, over the years, have been asked probably thousands of questions. You know, we've got a podcast on just answering questions. But there are seven that come up all the time. So we thought it's about time we did a podcast that answered the seven questions that you most crave the answers to.
Welcome to the Property Podcast, where every Thursday morning, property investors come to be informed and inspired. Today, yes, we are answering those most common seven questions. So chances are you've been wondering at least one of these. We are going to give you the answers in just a second. And stick around to the end, because in Hub Extra, we've got something that's going to make spending money a little bit more painless.
So it's time for our news story of the week. And Rob, you've been geeking out because Home Track have released the quarter four figures for 2019 on the state of the rental market. And there's lots to look at here. What's caught your eye? I don't even know where to start.
Yeah, there's so much in here. So we'll link to the original article in the show notes so you can go and look at it for yourself. But I'm going to try to give you three main takeaways right now. Takeaway number one, rents are up over the last year by 2.6%, which clearly is good news for investors. But there's good news for people who are renting as well, because that 2.6% is lower than the average earnings growth over the last year, which is 3.8%. So rents are going up, but they're actually becoming more affordable, which is interesting. Second takeaway is about where that rental growth is happening. So the three top cities for rental growth are York, Bristol and Nottingham, all of which have seen rental increases of over 5% in the last year, which is really quite amazing and shows how strong demand is in those cities. Rents have actually fallen in three cities as well, which are Coventry, Middlesbrough and Aberdeen. So sorry, Rob, your Aberdeen prediction is looking a bit ropey right now. I know that's rentals, but it doesn't bode well for capital growth.
Rob, this is 2019. I made a prediction for 2020. Don't you worry. There's time yet.
The trend will reverse. Okay, fine. And my third takeaway is a longer term one, looking back at these numbers over the last decade. According to this data, over the last decade, average rents have grown by 27%, from £700 a month on average to £886 a month. And that 27% increase is almost exactly the same as the growth in average earnings over that decade at 26%, which means rental affordability now is exactly the same as it was a decade ago if your earnings have been going up in line with the average. And there are two reasons why I think that's interesting. First of all, it's exactly what the underlying economics would predict. And secondly, it's one of the wonderful things about property. You have an income stream that tends to go up in line with earnings, which in turn tends to go up in line with inflation. So the year-to-year, quarter-to-quarter stats like we're looking at now are really interesting. But then when you zoom out a bit and you look over a longer period of time, you look at a decade, like we talked about on the podcast a couple of weeks back, then you can really see the bigger picture of what all of this means. We get asked a lot of questions, and that's brilliant because it means there are actually people listening. And we do our best to answer as many of them as we can. We're closing in on 500 questions answered on Ask Rob and Rob, in fact, which goes out every Tuesday. But among all the questions that we see that are sent in for Ask Rob and Rob, they get asked to us on the socials that come in over email, there are some that are far and away more popular than the others. So today, once and for all, we are going to run through the seven questions that we get asked more than any other. And because it wouldn't be very helpful if we just read out the questions, we're going to answer them as well.
Okay, so the first one, Rob, is who are you? Everyone wants to know, which Rob are you? Well, not everyone. Some people have figured it out. There's an easy way, Rob, actually, they can figure it out. It's via our YouTube channel, because you can actually see us there, and we say, hi, I'm Rob B, and you say, I'm Rob D, and you can actually see which one's which, because actually, it's incredible the amount of people who listen to our voices, see a picture of us, and actually think that we're the other way around. That happens all the time. I don't know why, but it does.
Yeah, it does, and I guess we can both choose to be flattered or offended by that as however we see fit, because it seems to happen equally both ways. But yeah, I think rather than going into a personal ad style physical description now, maybe heading over to the YouTube channel is the best way of answering that one.
So the next question, Rob, is how many properties do you own? So come on, fess up, how many? Have you started yet?
I have made property investments in my time, yes, but I am not going to say how many properties I own. And Rob, even you don't know how many properties I own, and I don't know how many you own. which I know some people might think is really strange because we talk about property nonstop. Some people might even think that it's wrong of us not to say how many properties we own and might then get suspicious and think, well, maybe we don't own any property or we've only got one or two. But Rob, there are lots of good reasons to not answer this question. But one of them being it just doesn't matter.
No, it doesn't. And there's a few ways to look at this. You could say to someone, how many properties do you own? And that person says, 5. And you ask the person next to them, how many properties do you own? And that person says, 1. And you may then come to the conclusion that, wow, the person with 5 has the more impressive portfolio. But what happens if those 5 properties are terraces, say, in Middlesbrough, and they're worth 50k each? But the person with the 1 property owns a apartment in London and it's worth 750,000. What portfolio do you prefer now? Which is now the more impressive portfolio? The value, again, doesn't necessarily mean it's more impressive, but I know which portfolio I'd rather have. And that's the point. It can be misleading, the number of properties. People are often quick to say, oh, I've got 30 properties, I've got 20, I've got 10, whatever the number is, and they're proud of that, and rightly so. That's a wonderful achievement. But where are those properties? A portfolio of higher end properties, to me, is more impressive from a financial point of view, and that's why most people do this, remember, than someone with a larger portfolio in low value areas.
Yeah, exactly. That's one way in which the number of properties doesn't in itself tell you much. The other is the amount of time that that portfolio has been built up over. So say one person owns 5 properties and they bought them all 10 years ago. Okay, they've had some experience, that's great. But if they haven't done anything since, it's possible that their knowledge might be somewhat out of date. If another person has got 5 properties, the same 5 properties, but they bought all of them last month, they've only just completed, they went and bought them all in one go, they've just started out in property, then the amount of experience they've got could be pretty minimal compared to if somebody has bought 5 properties over 5 years. It's just another example of how knowing how many properties someone owns. It tells you something, it tells you more than nothing, but it might not tell you the amount that you think it does, and it might lead you to the wrong conclusion.
But to give you some comfort, we do between us own properties, multiple, and we've both got experience in developing properties and construction. And Rob's done flips, we own a letting agent, and we've helped thousands and thousands of property investors. So while there are going to absolutely be people out there with more experience than us, we feel fairly comfortable in the experience that we've got. But we also know we don't know it all, and we embrace the learning opportunities that will come our way in the future. Now, this next question, Rob, I would say is probably the one I get the most. And it's, where's the best place to invest right now? And again, that is such a difficult question to answer.
It's so difficult to answer. It's especially difficult to answer on a podcast where you might be listening in a couple of years' time and that best place to invest, if it ever existed, might have changed. But it's also difficult because it depends so much on the person who's asking and what they want. Are they looking for income? Are they looking for growth? Are they looking to get hands-on? Are they not? Where do they live? Is it important that they're near their properties? There's so much to take into account. It's also a question that I'm wary about answering because it tends towards being overly simplistic and it leaves out a lot of other possibly more important things. So wherever you invest, the exact investment that you make within wherever you've chosen and the deal that you get on that property is really important too. You could pick the best possible area but make the worst possible investment in that area and come off far worse than if you just picked somewhere average. So I've just given a whole load of caveats, but maybe Rob, you'd like to step in with an actual answer.
Yes, there are areas that we feel are at a point right now that are primed for growth, that's capital growth. And if you want to know where those places are, well, you're in luck. There's a YouTube video on this subject, our 2020 property hotspots, and also a podcast on our 2020 property hotspots. So you can choose which one you want to go and consume. But remember, Rob's made a really good point here that just choosing the best area doesn't mean that you're going to get the best investment. You've still got to do your research. You've still got to put your work in. And also, that's just for capital growth. If you're chasing a return or a yield or your strategy slightly different, then those areas may not apply. So again, be wary. Just because that area might be great for capital growth doesn't necessarily mean that the ROI, return on investment, or your yield is going to be spectacular. So you've got to understand what criteria makes the best place for you. You've got to understand your goals and what you're trying to achieve, and then you might be able to get to the answer. So we could just go Liverpool, and the answer probably is Liverpool. But actually do a bit more research than that, because the area you choose is just a small part of making a great investment.
So you said, Rob, that question, where's the best place to invest, is probably the question that you get asked the most. And I think you're right about that. But there's a very close runner-up for me, and that is this next question. Where are we in the 18-year cycle? Now, I love that people are asking this question, because it means that they've listened to our episodes on the 18-year cycle, or they've watched the free Property Hub University course that we've put together on it. If you haven't, if you don't know what the property cycle is, go to propertyhub.net, type cycle into the search bar, and find all that good stuff. And please do, because it is a really important concept. Now, we'll give you an answer for this one. So at the time of recording, near the beginning of 2020, it feels to me like we are towards the end of the mid-cycle wobble. We're just coming out of that, and we're coming into the second growth phase of the cycle. So that's a fairly straightforward answer. Bear in mind, of course, that I could be wrong. And having that answer might be helpful. But Rob, I'd say more important than that is learning the cycle well enough to understand for yourself where you believe we are and what signs to look for to determine what's going to happen next.
Yeah, I completely agree. And I agree with where you think we are in the cycle right now. But understanding why we believe that is so important. Having that knowledge will give you confidence. If you're just relying on hearing Rob and I give an opinion on the cycle and taking it as fact, it may give you some confidence. But if something goes against you and there's a small wobble, or the media goes a bit negative on property, you may then start to question what you've heard from us. Whereas if you have studied the 18-year property cycle and you understand it for yourself, you can ignore the media. You can ignore those minor tremors and occasional wobbles, because you have a good understanding how the long term will probably play out. The great thing is we've done loads on the 18-year property cycle. If you go to the podcast page on our website, you can use the search bar there for the 18-year property cycle. As Rob's already said, we've got a course on this subject that you can take advantage of, again, on the website. So it's absolutely free. So dig in, learn. It's so important to understand the economics of property, because when you do, the confidence you have as an investor is dramatically improved. Now, the next question, Rob, and I do like this one, because people get really passionate and really partisan on the answer. And the question is, house or flat? What aggressive camp are you in, Rob? Where are you on the forum shouting about which one's best? Because most people in a forum seem to have very, very strong views.
They do, and it would make for so much of a more interesting podcast if I did as well. But I don't. I see why people ask the question when they're starting out, because it's one of the most obvious differences between different properties, of course. But boringly, I think they both have pros and cons, and it depends what you're after. With houses, you have more control. You don't have a service charge to pay, and so you don't have to worry about what the management company is like. But with a flat, conversely, you don't have to do all that maintenance yourself, so it's easier to be hands off. So I think when people do get passionate about this, it's telling you more about them than it is about the actual investment itself. So if someone is super pro houses, it probably just means that they want to have control, and there's nothing wrong with that at all. But I think it's just important to be aware that everyone has their biases, and that's going to be reflected in the answers they give. But overall, Rob, in a larger portfolio, I think it's nice to have a mix. I do, and I know that you do as well.
Absolutely. Mine is weighted more to flats and apartments, because generally, and it's not a hard and fast rule, but generally, if you get it right, they are easier to have in your portfolio, easier to manage, and there are less things to go wrong. So that suits me. But it's not going to suit everyone, particularly if you're looking to add value or do refurbs. Of course, it can work with a flat, but you've got more chance of making it work with a house. So there is no best. It's just what's best for you. And Rob, people do have strong views on houses or flats. And when you get started as well, people also will have strong views on what strategy you should take. Should you do buy-to-let, HMOs, flips, the list goes on. There's so many. But again, this is about understanding yourself, where you are right now, and understanding where you want to get to. And that will help you determine what you should do. And that's the way you should assess which strategy you should take on, is by understanding your goals and your current position.
Yeah, more than any other, this is a question that's literally impossible to answer without having a really detailed understanding of what it is that you're trying to achieve and how much money you've got and how much time you've got and what your appetite for risk is and all this kind of thing. I really sympathize with people who are asking this question because it's a really important thing to get to grips with. And it's also so difficult when you're starting out to make that decision, especially when everything you read and everyone you come into contact with is extolling the virtues of a different strategy. Someone is telling you that HMOs are the only way to go. Someone else thinks that buy-to-let is the way forward. It's so hard to pick through all that and come to your own view, and especially because there are so many factors relating to your own situation that you need to take into account.
And this is where you should be wary. You should be wary when people have strong views and say, this is the best strategy. And with many of the things we've talked about today, you've got to be wary. Because the best place to invest right now, people can have strong views. You know, if it's houses or apartments, people can have strong views. The strategy, as we said, people can have strong views. And that's often because they're basing their opinion on what they've done, and that has worked out for them, and that's why they're projecting that onto you. They're not being untoward, they're just basing it on their own life experiences. But what they're not appreciating when they're putting their viewpoints strongly across to you is that their position is very different to your position, and by not understanding you, they can't really give you good advice. Now, in the podcast, Rob and I will give, you know, lots of general advice and lots of guidance and lots of things for you to think about. But we can't give you the one strategy that will work well for all of you because it doesn't exist. And that's why you have to be very wary if somebody does say, right, here's this one strategy for you and feels very strongly about it, if they haven't taken time to get to know you and understand you, if they haven't been questioning you about your goals, your position right now, the time that you have available to you, the passion that you have for this. There's so many things you need to be aware of in your own situation before you can make a good decision on this. But to help you with this, we do have a course. And again, it's on the website, propertyhub.net. You can find it in the free courses section. Yeah, absolutely no cost. And it's which property strategy is right for you. Do that course and that will give you the process and the thinking you need to go through to be able to choose the right strategy. And we'll give you the pros and cons of each strategy as well. Now, before we get on to the last question that we get asked all the time, I think it's worth saying now that you may feel that, you know, quite a few of these questions, we've not given you a clear, specific answer, like it's this, it's that. But that's the point. A lot of people will give you those quick answers. But actually, what you should really take from this is that it's about asking yourself better questions and not rushing to conclusions. Because if you take the time to think about these, you're going to make better decisions. You're going to be a better property investor. Looking for the quick answer, oh, how do I do it? Give me it in two sentences, or where's the best place, or what's the best strategy? I want to know in under 30 seconds. There are plenty of people out there who will give you that answer, but it's almost certainly going to be the wrong answer for you. So taking that time up front to get to know your situation, to make sure you fully understand what's important to you and where your goals are, that then will make you a better property investor. And that, Rob, links very nicely into the final question, which is, how do I get started? And for me, it is thinking about the end at the beginning and going, right, what do I want from this? Why am I doing it? Get very clear on that and then work back.
No, exactly that. I think that's quite hard advice to take, because when you get excited about property, what you really want to do is just go and do it. And it is exciting. And in all honesty, if you do that, chances are you'll be okay. One of the great things about property is that over a long enough period of time, it's very forgiving and true catastrophes are quite rare. So if you got excited about investing in the stock market and you went and invested in the shares of one company almost at random with very little knowledge, you could end up being completely wiped out and have an absolute disaster. In property, that's unlikely. And because the last 20 years have been particularly kind to property investors, there are examples everywhere of people who've just gone in without much knowledge at all and actually done really well. So I can see why most people probably hear us say all this about the importance of working out where you want to be and working back from your goals and doing your research and go, yeah, that sounds great. And then just ignore it and go and buy something next week. I get it. But while if you do that, you probably won't have a complete disaster, although some people do, there are horror stories out there. What's almost certain is that you won't do as well as you otherwise could have done. I know so many people who've gone out and bought a property and that property's done fine. But now that person is stuck. They can't progress any further because the property that they bought or the strategy that they adopted wasn't aligned with what their goals would be if they'd stopped to think about it. And that ties back into the strategy and where to buy and all that kind of thing. So by doing things what seems like the boring way and not going anywhere near right move to start with and just asking these really difficult questions of yourself about what it is that you actually want to accomplish will allow you ultimately to get so much further. One final thing that I would say though, Rob, to think about in conjunction with that is that you also see people who do nothing but research. And it is worth giving yourself a deadline for having done this thinking by and deciding that by this date you will be ready and you will start. Because you do see people who are afraid to do the wrong thing and end up trapped in the planning stage forever and never achieve anything.
Yeah, absolutely. You do see this happen quite a bit. And they use the excuse of, I'm still doing research, to stop moving forward. And they might believe that as well. And it's probably based on fear. But actually, at some point, you do have to take action. And giving yourself that deadline is a great way of doing that, like forcing yourself to do it. You know, if you say in 6 months' time, I'm going to make my first investment, that gives you more than enough time to get comfortable with the basics of property, more than enough time to do the research of the areas you're interested in and build relationships up with the key people you'll need in your team. And something we say all the time and experienced investors always agree with is that you'll learn so much when you actually start. Like, so much. It's all theory to begin with, but when you get that practical experience, the lessons come thick and fast. And doesn't mean it's because things are going wrong all the time, although sometimes they do. It's more about just working through it yourself and having to live those experiences and those emotions will really teach you a lot. So absolutely give yourself the thinking time. Make sure you understand why you're even in this game, why you're going to invest. Get very clear on that. Do your research, but then take the action.
When you take that action, we want to know about it because we love hearing your success stories. It's the best thing about doing what we do, and everyone else benefits from the motivation of hearing what you've achieved as well. So you can let us know on the socials. We're on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Property Hub UK. You can let us know on the forum, or you can leave us a review of the podcast, which is what Tom did. Tom said, I only discovered Rob and Rob's podcast a few weeks back and have been working my way through the back catalogue ever since. What started as a pipe dream has become a reality with my first buy-to-let property about to complete, and I feel so confident in moving forward. Well, that is what we love to hear. As we often say, success means different things to different people at different points. A success story doesn't have to mean that you've just bought your 10th property or you've just flipped something for £50,000 profit or you've just got something at 20% BMV. Taking that first step and having the confidence to secure that first property, that is a real success. And that sets the foundation for so many great things to come. So well done, Tom.
So it's time we give you a bit extra. Yes, it's Hub Extra time. We look to give you something a little bit more each week on the podcast. And we do this in email as well. Every Friday, the Hub Extra email goes out. And we try and make it the most valuable email you receive each and every week. To get that email, just sign up to the Property Hub. It's free. And you'll get this lovely email delivered in your inbox every Friday with lots of property goodness. And loads of other good stuff too. And hopefully you think this is good stuff. Now, some of you are going to be like, what? Of course, this is normal stuff and I use this already. But some of you don't. And I think that's why we've picked it this week. And what we've picked is Apple Pay or Google Pay. And yes, it's been around for a while, but so many people haven't adopted to it yet. And I was one of those people. I've only been using it for about 3-4 months now. And I didn't bother at first because I was like, well, it's just contactless. What's the effort compared to getting my card out the wallet to using my phone? But actually, I found it so much easier to process payments by starting up with Apple Pay. Whether I'm on the tube in London or I'm just, you know, grabbing a quick coffee or whatever, the ease of just glancing at my phone, the facial ID working, you know, in milliseconds and then tapping the device is just brilliant. And I know it's a small thing, but it just is one of those little life hacks that if you haven't bothered to get around doing yet, do it. Because it'll just make a small improvement to your day-to-day. It really does.
Yeah, I probably only started using it in the last 6 months as well when I got a new phone and I use Google Pay. And it does just remove that little bit of friction. And it's kind of amazing to think that you could just take your phone out and nothing else and have everything that you need for the whole day. The other thing with it is that you can load all your different cards onto there and you can change which card payment gets taken off. So if, like many people, you've got multiple cards, current accounts, and you might have a business account for your properties as well. You don't need to lug all those cards around with you. You can just use your phone to select the one that you want to pay with, and away you go. So you're right, Rob. It is only a small thing, and it has been around for a while, but we both weren't onto it 6 months ago. So if you're not, then consider spending a few minutes setting it up. I think you might be surprised.
So that's us done for another week. We'll be back with Ask Rob and Rob on Tuesday. And you can find us in lots of places now. Property Hub UK is what you need to search for. That includes YouTube, which we touched on a few times today. That also includes Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. If you want to connect with us, we've got a great and knowledgeable team that are always active on those profiles. Make sure you subscribe, follow, or do whatever you need to do with these lovely social channels and interact with us. We'd love to hear from you. So plenty of property goodness to keep you going until we're back next week. Until then, take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.